Thanksgiving is about family, for better or worse. There are relatives whose company you generally enjoy and lament that time and geography steals your ability to see them as often as you'd like. After a certain age, it's harder to gather up loved ones in one place to celebrate and to catch up on little Timmy's latest achievements. Of course, all families include relatives you can only tolerate this one time of year. You strain to hold your tongue as they spew out resentments. How they haven't been rewarded with the success they deserve. It's always someone else's fault, they whine. Funny, it's always those who actually have less than they do. The complaints intensify the more the wine flows. Thank God there's football for distraction when your tolerance level reaches the breaking point. At sunrise, this particular Thanksgiving, my friend Moses Jin and I were on the highway, which was bereft of cars this early. Over the river and through the woods we went, but we weren't on our way to grandmother's house. We were on our way to see a dying man we barely knew. But we couldn't think of a more fulfilling way to spend the holiday. Some background. A couple of years ago, Jin approached me and asked for help, something he rarely does given his independent spirit and can-do persona.
Rouse. Favor ain't for me, and if you don't want to do it, I'll think of something else.
Come on, man, you know there's nothing I won't do for you, short of murder. And even then, if you ask nicely, what do you need?
Let's talk over scotch.
Don't have to ask me twice. My porch faces southeast over the Atlantic Ocean, and the views on this bright autumn afternoon were stunning. They're stunning in the spring, summer, and winter as well. No matter what the weather or time of day. The salt air is invigorating, and every day I look forward to sitting on a rocker with an adult beverage after the day's work is done. Lately, there hasn't been much detective work, therefore more time for scotch and contemplation. I am not complaining. Jin came out with two glasses. One contained his beloved Macallan. Mine was Glenfiddich. Both were ablaze with ragged chunks of clear ice to chill the blessed single malt. After our first sip, he said,
I was playing Harbortown a few days back, and they paired me with an old black gentleman named Wynn Jackson. Had to be in his late 80s.
Now let me guess. You want me to formally complain that the pro segregated two elderly black men together in a cart?
We had the course to ourselves, so that ain't it. Besides, I ain't that elderly. If you doubt it, we can take it outside.
I was kidding. Go on.
Anyways, this dude was pretty cool for a geezer. Lives in Georgia. Visiting Hilton Head because he saw the golf course on TV and wanted to play the last hole. The one with the lighthouse. We got to talking. Man had some stories to tell. Korean War vet, radio exec in New York, made a good living for himself.
The scotch had a nice burn to it. Sounds like an interesting fellow. I can see how you'd relate.
Well, like I said, he's got a ton of great stories about his life. Folks he knew's like a who's who of the 50s and 60s. Met a quiz show host from the Midwest. Turned out to be Johnny Carson. Hung out with Hope and Crosby and Jack Benny on their USO tours. Even had some time rolling with the Rat Pack a little because he was friends with Sammy Davis Jr.
That sounds like Zelig, that Woody Allen film.
More like Forrest Gump. Anyway, he's retired, lots of free time, so he wrote a book. It's short, maybe 150 pages. Dude even designed a cover himself.
Jin paused as a noisy bunch of gulls flew overhead. He used the break to address the Macallan. Does it have a title?
It does, and he's proud of it. A tough-as-nails black man from Mobile who made it in the big city against all odds. Now, I told him it was a little long and awkward, but he said there's no way he'd change it.
I shrugged, and he went on.
The man had an agent friend of his shopping around. He got a stack of rejections. He's not looking to make a killing on it. He really just wants it out there.
Now, why is it so important to him? A stiff gust interrupted his answer. I could barely hear him over the wind and the ocean's roar, a small price to pay for living on the beach.
He told me his doc says he's got some kind of dementia. You barely notice if you didn't know, but he did repeat things he just said a few minutes before.
That's the first sign of Alzheimer's. That's a shame.
He got the diagnosis over a year ago, and that's when he started writing a book. He figured he'd lose the memories eventually, and he wanted to hang on to them. Let other people know, too. The subtitle is, I Just Want You to Know Who I Am.
The older we get, it's hard to feel relevant. It's like the world's moving on and leaving us behind. Nothing left but in the past.
Yeah, I don't think the man has a lot of money. Lives on his army pension and Social Security. It was his one big vacation this year. He drove all the way from Macon to play this course. Saved up all year for the greens fees. I wouldn't be surprised if he slept in his car.
Yeah, I could see how you'd want to help, but what can I do?
Before I came to you, I checked into what it would cost to self-publish it like he wants. Professional-like. There are consultants who do it for a few grand, but they seem like rip-off artists to me.
Yeah, they generally are. Take advantage of people who feel they have something to say but can't attract publishers. I've been there. I worked with a ghostwriter to self-publish a story about a case I had a few years ago. Sold a few copies, mostly to friends and family.
Well, that's why I'm asking you if you can put this thing together for them. Only take you a couple days, no deadline.
That's really not my field, Mo. I'm a private investigator, not a writer. I do know a couple editors who might take it on as a favor. I'd be willing to chip in and cover their expenses.
Not looking for a handout, just a hand.
He sang the old Streetwise jingle in that rumble of his.
Come on, man. I want to do something for this man. Get your lazy ass in gear. Do you some good. Sherlock Holmes used to play violin and do blow between cases. God knows what you've been up to.
I keep occupied with the help of my old friend Glenn here. I held up my glass.
That's what I'm afraid of. Like they say, a mind's a terrible thing to waste.
Moses was right about the book. Wynn Jackson's story was inspiring. Here was a man born to a single mother, suffered through a sickly childhood, substandard education, and Jim Crow at its most virulent. He rose to become a war hero and a successful businessman. He met a number of famous people over the years and had compelling stories about his encounters. One of the more impressive things he did was at age 50. He spent every dime he had saved to build his mother a beautiful house in her hometown. In turn, she paid it forward and used the spare rooms to take in disadvantaged children. When she passed, years ago, the house was donated to the town that is now a library. The writing was crisp, unsentimental. He didn't congratulate himself for any of his altruistic deeds. He wrote that he only did what anyone would have. But there were many instances where that was simply not the case. Chief among them, dragging one of his Korean War company mates to safety after they'd both been wounded in combat. His harrowing description of the heroic act made my blood tingle. The irony was that his mate received the medal that he deserved. His friend, he explained without bitterness, was white. Throughout the manuscript, Wynn Jackson remained humble, never complaining about his lack of recognition. A prime example was a New York disc jockey who had been accorded legendary status for his uncanny ability to pick hit records. Jackson was the one who tipped him off, but remained behind the scenes. His connection to Sammy Davis Jr. had helped him get a job as an intern at a New York radio station, where he eventually became its program director. It was there that he met Diana Ross, Smokey Robinson, Stevie Wonder, and most of the black stars of the era. His tightest pal in the music industry was Johnny Mathis, who he said still sends him Christmas cards. They say that history is written by the winners. After reading the book, I was convinced that Jackson deserved a slice of that. With this treasure trove of incredible stories, I was at a loss to figure out why he couldn't find a publisher. After I finished marking up the book, Jin arranged a three-way phone call with Jackson. He formally introduced us and again explained my role to the old man in case he had forgotten that Jin had told him a few days earlier that I would help. "First, Mr. Jackson, it was a real honor to read your book. You've had quite a life. I can't help but admire you a great deal."
"Thank you, Mr. King. What's his name? Oh, yes, it was Mr. Jin. Speaks highly of you. I hope it's not too much trouble. I'm sure I can't pay you anywhere near what you deserve."
"Well, you've done all the real work. All I'd be doing is prepping it to publish. Technical stuff. I hope you don't mind if I say that I think your title is a bit ungainly. And with the cover art you've chosen, you won't be able to see the picture. The long title will cover it up."
"That's important that you get every word into that title. I told that to Mr.
Moses Jin. The problem is people will see this online and the thumbnail will be small. They won't be able to read the whole title."
"Yeah, the right folks will find it once it's on the worldwide internet."
I wanted to make the book as attractive as possible, since the story was so inspiring. The man wasn't thinking about marketing, he just wanted it out there. "Have you considered pricing?"
"Free. I want anyone who wants it to be able to get it."
"Well, that's not quite how it works. The publisher has expenses, even for an e-book. There's a minimum they can charge. With a paperback edition, there's more, printing and shipping costs, etc."
"Well, make it the lowest possible, Mr. Jin. I trust you on that, and make sure the libraries get their copies. Thank you, sir, and tell Mr. King I thank him, too. Bye."
He hung up. I turned to Jin. Kept getting us confused. Dementia getting worse?
"Yeah, I'm thinking if you want to buff it up some, he won't know the difference. Don't change it too much, though. It's his work. Let it stand on its own."
"Yeah, I will. I just don't get why some publisher wouldn't give it a shot."
"When we played golf, he told me they said all the references were too old. People like Hope, Crosby, Mathis don't register with the younger readers, meaning under 60. They won't understand some of the language. He calls the bad guys muzzlers. Gangster slang from the old days. Not gangsta like today. And that war is ancient history."
"Now, that book a few years back about a survivor of that Japanese prison camp in World War II was a bestseller. Got made into a movie."
"But this was Korea, and we didn't win that one. And don't bring up MASH. That was years ago. I told you from the get-go he wants his story told in his own words, what he wants to tell it. We have to abide by that."
"Yeah, it makes my job easier. It's a shame, though. This deserves to be widely read, but it's his call. I'll just add a few commas and order some author's copies for him. Does he have family or anyone to take care of him as this gets worse?"
"Yeah, he told me a while back he had a girl come in a few days a week to clean, cook for him. I'm not sure he still does. He lives alone. No relatives, he's outlived them all. Yeah, you and me, not married, no kids. Feels like we're looking at our future, boss."
I had one more conversation with Jackson, who asked that I write a brief foreword, thanking Jin and me for our help. I dashed off a few paragraphs that I hoped would entice a curious reader to give the book a chance. I ordered 20 author's copies and had them sent to Jackson. Normally, I would have requested proofs, but he didn't think that was necessary, trusting that I had done what I promised. I ordered 10 paid copies for myself and Jin as a remembrance of this extraordinary gentleman, whom I had never met. Maybe the few early sales would jumpstart things. Maybe not. Shortly thereafter, a big case came up. My last days of scotch and relaxing with sporting events and mindless television were over. The case consumed all my time for a month and almost got me killed. I had no time to think about Wynn Jackson and his book. A year and a half later, just before this Thanksgiving, I got a strange voicemail from a Florida cop. He asked that I contact him about a friend of mine who was in some trouble. I was a little suspicious. Particularly at this time of year, people pretending to be cops call and ask for money to bail out a friend or provide him with a lawyer. I do have friends in Florida, and on the off chance that one of them had gotten into a pickle, I couldn't ignore the call. I called the number he'd left.
Jacksonville PD. Pat Clooney speaking.
Officer Clooney, Riley King, you left a message for me?
I did, sir. Thanks for getting back to me.
Oh, what can I do for you?
I believe you know a man named Wynn Jackson, older African-American gentleman.
Jin arched an eyebrow and nodded that it could be legit. I have had business with Mr. Jackson, yes.
Well, he's in a bad way. I'm not sure if you're aware that he has Alzheimer's. It's starting to shut down his systems. He's in a VA facility, and I'm afraid he doesn't have too much time left.
I'm curious, Officer Clooney, how did you come to call me, and how do you know Wynn Jackson?
Well, a few months ago, I stopped Mr. Jackson on I-75. He was driving erratically. I asked him to get out of the car, planning to run a sobriety test. Now, he was mumbling something about being lost, and there were no exits on the highway, and he couldn't remember leaving his house. His license said he resided in Macon, Georgia, which is over 4 hours from here.
Yeah, I know where it is.
My partner and I got him back to the station house and parked him in an interrogation room. My partner wanted to just throw him in a drunk tank, but there were a couple of things made me hesitate. He didn't smell of liquor, and on the passenger seat was a book with his picture and name on the cover. I thumbed through it. It blew me away.
Now it was apparent how Clooney knew how to contact me. I had written the foreword and signed it Riley King, Hilton Head, South Carolina. My business number is listed. I said, so what did you do then?
Well, I saw he served in Korea. There's a VA clinic on Jefferson Street, so I brought him there. They couldn't immediately diagnose Alzheimer's, but they said his symptoms were consistent with it, and they took him in. A long story short, I took it on myself to make sure he got taken care of. He was renting in Macon, so I had to terminate the lease, get his belongings into storage. Apparently he has no living relatives, so I had to do this on my own without actual power of attorney, given his condition. Lots of hassles there.
That goes above and beyond, officer. That was very good of you to do all that.
Well, Jacksonville doesn't specialize in long-term care for vets, so he got transferred to Gainesville, where they have a larger facility. I visit him every couple of weeks.
Well, it's good to know that there are caring cops like you out there.
Well, you deserve a lot of credit. Jackson told me how you helped him get the book published. I read the whole book 3 times, even bought a bunch of copies to give to my friends on the force. Some of them were so moved they helped me with expenses.
Well, if you don't mind, Officer Clooney, let me ask you this. Why did you do what you did for this man? There must be a lot of folks you've run into with similar issues. You can't go this far to help all of them. His voice grew thick with emotion.
It was a book. You see, my dad served in Korea. He wouldn't talk about it with us ever, got pissed off royally if we even asked. But after he died, Mom told us he was badly wounded there, and that was why he limped. She said a colored fella helped save him. Sorry, but that's what her generation called blacks. I read Jackson's chapters about what happened over there in the war. I can't be sure it was my dad he saved, but they were in the same unit.
Pretty amazing story. Of course, you asked Wynn about it.
Well, he didn't remember the name of the man he saved, even when I asked if it was Clooney, just that it was a small white guy. Now, my dad was short, got a Purple Heart and Silver Star for bravery. Jackson got nothing. Now, I was born after the war, so I might not even be here if it weren't for him. Now, at this point, it doesn't matter to me if it was my dad or not. I want to do everything I can for the man.
Yeah, I can see how you would. My friend Moses Jin and I'd be glad to help in any way we can. What can we do?
Well, in Wynn's cogent moments, which don't happen too much anymore, he seems to know this is probably going to be his last Thanksgiving. He wanted to have dinner with a few of the guys in his ward and some old friends. Problem is, he couldn't remember any names. I asked him about you and Moses Jin, who you mentioned in the foreword. He said that'd be great. Hey, I even reached out to Johnny Mathis' people, but I haven't heard back yet. I got a local restaurant to cater turkey and all the trimmings. Owner was all too happy to do it for free when I showed him the book. Now, I know you probably have plans, but if not, would you be willing to travel to Gainesville for Thanksgiving dinner?
Well, even if Jin and I did have plans, we would have canceled them to be there. It was a 3.5-hour ride, and we booked rooms at a hotel in case we wanted to stay the night. On the drive, we checked book sales. It had sold almost 1,000 copies, which was impressive given the non-existent marketing and the odd title. It had to come from word of mouth. People who had come in contact with him at the home were the cops that Clooney had told. We met Clooney in the lobby of the VA facility. He was a burly fellow, short but muscular. Looked to be in his late 50s, crew cut almost all gray. He's wearing an ill-fitting blue suit that he'd outgrown 20 pounds ago, an outfit likely reserved for weddings and funerals. He was handsome in a boyish way. There was a mischievous twinkle in his eye as he greeted us. He said,
I have to warn you, Wynn has aged quite a bit over the last months. He's lost a great deal of weight. Jin said,
it was almost 2 years ago when I played golf with him. He was fairly fit then. You know, Riley's never met him in person. They worked on the book over the phone.
I didn't know that. Wynn's recollection of that whole affair is pretty fuzzy. Now, don't be shocked if he doesn't recognize you.
Understood.
I had no grounds for comparison when we entered his room, but Wynn Jackson was extremely frail. From Jin's face, as much as he'd been forewarned, I could tell he wasn't prepared for such a drastic change. Jackson was sitting crookedly in a wheelchair, wearing a bright red sweater that was 3 sizes too large. He was pale, gaunt, and bald. Moses touched him on the shoulder and said,
It's great to see you again.
Jackson smiled and said, in an overly loud voice,
Great to see you again, Johnny. Thanks for coming to celebrate Christmas.
A pleasant-looking fellow stepped from where he was sitting in the corner of a room, a man we hadn't noticed on our way in. His voice was melodic. Your name is Johnny, he said to Moses. So is mine. What are the chances? I almost responded, Chances are awfully good. It was Johnny Mathis, and he didn't look a day over 50. The food was excellent. The conversation, not so much. There were 3 other elderly veterans at the table, along with Mathis, Jin, Clooney, and me. We tried to engage Jackson, reminding him about how we had helped him with the book, but he wasn't sure what book we were talking about. He was deep within the clutches of the disease, living in a universe far away. He and his ward mates were content to chatter amongst themselves, making very little sense to the rest of us. Mathis sat next to Wynn, holding onto his hand and doing his best to make conversation about the good old days, which occasionally brought sweet memories to the surface, only to recede into gibberish. When the last of the pumpkin pie had been vanquished, the orderlies came and informed us that it was time for the vets to retire to their rooms. Mathis said goodbye first, whispering into the old man's ear, and then signaling us that he'd wait in the lobby to say goodbye. Clooney was next, said he'd be back to visit soon. Jin paid his respects. I was last. As I started to pull away, Wynn Jackson grabbed my arm and grasped it with amazing strength for someone so weak. He pulled me close.
See what I told you? The title was perfect. Not a word too long, Scout.
Wynn Jackson died on Christmas Eve that year. Even though I only met the man once, my heart misses him terribly.